Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email.
Well, I'll be darned. I am a jelly donut. Need a coffee. Ask not what your podcast can do for you, but what you can do for your podcast. Thank you.
This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require funds. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please buy Jack a coffee via the Ko-fi.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material needs. Special thanks go to our first Ko-fi Angels, Juanita Paz Chalacha and Raven Kiefer. Except those wishing to remain anonymous, benefactors will be announced in the final credits. And thank you truly for listening. Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 28. Chapter 25 continues. Thasgar was staring straight ahead as he paddled his side of the raft, then became alarmed when the logs under him started jumping, at first ever so slightly, then faster and higher.
What the devil? Gewan!
Yes! In moments, the entire raft was shaking from rude bumps and shoves underneath.
Everyone, flatten yourself! Distribute the weight!
Thasgar pulled his paddle out, got on all fours, and peered into the black water.
Too dark.
But could see nothing as Gewan crawled over to his side. The raft continued to shake with increasing violence. One log binding snapped from the strain. Do you see anything?
No. I'm not sure that I want to, either. But we'd better do something before whatever it is breaks us up.
Agreed. I wonder... In the next instant, the surface of the water became transparent as light glowed from beneath.
Oh, I hope you did that.
Yes, it only just occurred to me that a light sphere might work underwater. Now perhaps we can...
Gods!
What is it?
A large, dark silhouette alternately blocked and jerked around the light, making Gewan conjure another sphere. Horrified, he and Thasgar stared through the rippling distortions at the toothy jaws and long body of the giant Gar, at least as half as long as the raft, bumping its snout against the bottom, its fishy eyes glaring hungrily at the two men looking back at it. Thasgar unsheathed his sword.
I'll give that monster a few stings.
And jabbed it like a spear into the water. When his blade struck deep, he was surprised when it wouldn't come back out, the sword holding fast. Determined not to lose his weapon, he kept a grip on the hilt and was nearly jerked into the water as the gar thrashed in pain. Gawain grabbed hold of his friend as he tried to wiggle the sword loose, which sent the gar into even more of a frenzy.
Get it loose!
The fish powerful enough to yank them both under. With one last mighty tug, the blade came free, and the two men tumbled backward. Thasgar on top of Gawain.
Done, balls!
The archer picked himself up off his friend. Tough hide.
Oh, hell, here it comes again.
Waving its tail furiously behind it, the bleeding gar darted towards them.
Let me see if I can blind it with the lights.
Flicking a thought to his spheres, the enchanter moved them to where they hovered directly beside each gruesome eye. This seemed to work, the gar stopping its attack on the raft and looking with bewilderment into the lights. As it tried to move away, Gawain kept the spheres in place. The raft floated away, leaving behind the eerie patch of glowing water. Just as he judged they were far enough away for him to douse the lights, a shadow blotted out the gar, and suddenly the lights were gone.
Angels preserve us!
What was that?
I don't know, but it must have bitten into our friend's head, light spheres and all.
That was the only explanation he could think of for his spell vanishing like that.
Let's hope it doesn't like rafts for dessert.
We're clear of it!
Thasgar resumed his task of paddling, sitting a little further in on the logs and keeping a wary eye to their rear, though it was impossible to discern much of anything in the dark at this point. His imagination conjured distorted images of monsters that found gars tasty to eat. Gon came over from his corner and, with concern, gazed at his friend.
You all right? The thought of fish bigger than me makes my skin crawl. I know how you feel.
He half-smiled as he patted Thasgar's shoulder companionably and tottered back to his post. It had only been a short while after the gar's attack when an abrupt chorus reverberated around the raft. Before anyone could react, a herd of giant frogs splashed their way across the water, using the raft as a midway point between shores. They had come into a narrow channel that was about to open into a wider lake.
3, 4, 7.
Gon counted more than 10 as they landed square on the logs and lunged for the opposite shore.
11.
As quickly as the stampede started, it was over. One last frog bugling from somewhere in the dark. Everyone was at least partially soaked.
Ah, damn. I vow to see one of those toads roasting on a spit before we're done with the marsh.
I didn't think you ate frogs.
I don't, but I still want to murder that one that's been following us.
Let's stoke up the fire so we can dry off.
Aye.
Gon leaped to the task, having been disgruntled with the entirely too small cook fires he had been allowed to kindle, and tossed the majority of their tinder onto the glowing coals. Gawain was about to counter that suggestion, but then decided they had made so much of a spectacle of themselves at this point that a fire couldn't really make things much worse. And at this point, it would help Chania's group see them approach. He had no doubts that the princess was somewhere nearby, searching for Calron and them. With Gon's expertise, it wasn't long before there was as large a blaze as the raft's hearth could contain. They took turns huddling near it until their clothes were mostly dry again. They soon were to find out the futility of this exercise. It was close to midnight. The fire had died down to a handful of flames, and the marsh had fallen strangely silent. Flayna was the first to see a scaly hand grab onto the edge of the raft. For a moment, all she could do was stare in disbelief. A four-fingered hand covered in scales that glistened green in the dying light of the fire. Another appeared beside it. The others looked to where Flayna was hacking at the fingers with her dagger, then felt the raft beginning to shake and looked on their sides to see more hands hanging onto the logs. Cluck and Gunn stabbed at scaly hands near them. This worked initially, the hands disappearing, but twice as many would reappear just as quickly, and before anyone knew it, their entire raft was being shaken apart furiously as if they were in a gold tanner's sieve. Amidst the rough and tumble, shapes appeared out of the water. Scaly covered dorsal fins on the crown of their heads, rude incisors jutting out of what could have been reptile jaws, gills along their necks, and jet eyes.
Lizard men!
Lizard men?
Lizard Gaewon men. Dropped on all fours and released fiery spears at three of the heads nearest him, making them flail their hands over their faces uselessly before they submerged again. He had no idea of how lizard men lived, only that he had heard of the primitive species of waterborne gremlins. But it was clear they weren't playing games. More appeared than Gaewon could possibly handle alone, his friends completely occupied with staying out of the water and trying to hold the raft and their supplies together. Then the edge where Ablui was hanging on began to rise higher and higher as if an ocean wave had caught it, and the priest realized the nearly impossible was happening. Since the lizard men couldn't tear apart the raft, as was apparently their original intent, the druid magic holding firm against their efforts, they resorted to a more devastating strategy, capsizing the raft. At first, everyone clung like cats to the rising logs, but as the angle became steeper, the inevitable became obvious.
Freeze!
They tumbled into the water. Strong hands grabbed each one as they went under the surface and pulled them further down. Gaewon's light spells gone and the heart fire doused, the party was plunged into the murky, watery darkness. Chapter 26. His sleep, fitful at best, he was alerted by the footsteps approaching his hiding place while they were still distant. Seeing the wards of protection he had made on the tree trunks start to glow slightly, Calron remained very still and searched the darkness deliberately, aware that only a conjured creature or something demonic would cause his invisible mage marks to shimmer, he wondered
what might be following my trail now.
The silhouette of something hunched approached the knot of bushes under which he was hiding, the pale red eyes in its malformed head faintly luminescent. Feeling the air around him turn suddenly cold, he knew this beast was nothing to trifle with. Wishing he had some silver, he dug into his pocket and brought out a quartz pebble. Grasping it tightly in his palm, he muttered the invocation for the most powerful spell of protection he knew. The pebble warmed his fingers, the ever-present tingle of magic increasing to a rush of energy surging through his body, yet he lay low and waited. The demon stopped a few paces distant, turning its head this way and that, its glowing slit eyes unblinking. Despite the darkness, it halted its roving gaze and stared directly at him. Concentrating on his spell, he felt the quartz grow hot, almost to the point of burning his skin. For a long moment, demon and mage remained still, each assessing the other, the shadows between them fairly crackling with restrained energy. The air flashed with violet light. Calron watched the demon flinch, then hunch itself over and back away with subservient grumbles. Another silhouette moved in from the side and barked something foreign at the retreating monster, then turned and looked directly at the mage.
Come out, little rabbit. We've been looking for you all night.
A dark yellow sphere appeared, floating above the sinister face leering at him. Recognizing the dark skin, tapered ears, blue-streaked black hair, and yellow eyes, Calron could only stare in disbelief at the drow grinning at him, then flicked his eyes at the two dirks and handheld crossbow hanging from the belt, and then the vicious-looking whip curled in the dark, slender hand, not sure if it was wise to move or even lower his protection spell.
Oh, do not fret.
The dark elf gestured vaguely with the coiled whip.
This little toy is only to keep our pets in line.
Pet?
They make excellent bloodhounds. Now, come out before you rot in there and turn into a toadstool.
Knowing better than to argue with someone wielding a demon whip, Calron got up and shoved his way out of the tight circle of bushes while keeping his hand squeezed around the hot quartz pebble.
What do you want of me?
Let's look at you.
The drow crossed arms, tucking the whip under an elbow, then pursed his thin lips and perused his subject critically.
Not bad. For a human.
Uncomfortable with the scrutiny, Calron imitated the stance.
Nor you, for an elf.
Narrowing his angled yellow eyes, the drow curled his lip in anger.
Dare not mock me, mage. You address me as Sokandra. Dare to call me elf again, and I'll feed you to my pet.
He did his best to appear unruffled.
Tell me what you want of me.
Drow, their existence unknown by most humans, were reputed to be powerful warlocks and deadly opponents, either with weapons or magic.
What irony! To fight for freedom, only to be captured by a far worse society than the one I've escaped. I will not be taken prisoner again.
Re-evaluating his opponent, the drow uncrossed his arms and smiled again. Apparently unaware that the expression only made him appear even more menacing.
Now there's no need for this nonsense, Calron. I've come to seek your assistance.
How did you know my name?
We know what's required in order to obtain that which we seek. For instance, we know about you and the druid, Mara, and how you managed her death in place of yours.
The Hyla. Kill or be killed. What about it?
Calron hadn't worked out his feelings about that event, not sure if he regretted her loss or not. She was intelligent.
Perhaps too much so.
And had seemed to like him.
But the choice of her death, or mine, was obvious.
When the black dragon attacked, he had thrown the only defense he could think of, a spell that created a line of multiple reflections of himself, each moving independently of the other. In the instant of the dragon's confusion at the appearance of so many men, Calron had run off to the side behind his images, leaving Mara to take the serpent's first blast of acid. Hiding just out of sight of the invaded nest, he waited for the spell to cease and the dragon to leave, then sought one of the many seething puddles of acid into which he submersed part of his wrist shackles. Once free of the iron rings, he had run back to their raft and paddled as far from the island as strength would take him. When night came, he beached the raft and found a place to hide until dawn.
Your pragmatism is admirable, but your skills are inadequate.
I'm still alive, aren't I?
Inadequate for our needs, presently.
Back to that, are we?
Calron shifted his stance and wondered,
what to do next? Nattering with a drow in the middle of a swamp is unusual, to say the least, and very discomforting. What about my needs?
Sakandra's eyebrows lifted appreciably.
Ah, pragmatism again. Very good. Concerning the enchanter you seek to destroy, you may rest assured that he has sealed his doom and very soon will be dead.
This caught him off guard, and he blinked in mild astonishment.
Gaywan?
The very same. In his blind hunt for you, he stumbled into the wrong nest, you might say. 'Tis only a matter of time before he is killed, and quite spectacularly, I might add. Does this take care of your needs?
I require proof of his demise.
You will have it, I assure you. Like mages, enchanters do not die quietly.
Considering this, Calron regarded the dark elf silently for a moment.
And what are your needs?
Paralleling yours, 'twould seem. Perchance you recall an elf princess named Chania of Gramont?
Remembering the battle in Hopetown, Calron could recall little more than a fair-haired elf woman who seemed to be an underling of Gawain's. She had been on hand during his capture and incarceration.
Insignificant, but I do remember.
Indeed, a trivial individual with fawning sycophants in her shadow. But her position as heir to the throne of Gramont is important to us.
Princesses and elfin kingdoms do not interest me.
But furthering your powers does.
I'm tired of asking this question. But perhaps it will turn out worthwhile. What do you want?
Your services as a mage. We need to infiltrate the royal family, but have no means. Fair elves' energies are precisely opposite ours. They would be alerted to our presence in any form.
Assured that he was in little, if any, danger, Calron let go his protection spell and pocketed the quartz.
I don't see where I could be of much help, being human.
Ah, you don't see much at all where elves are concerned. They are a soft lot and easy to distract. And a human among them would arouse little suspicion.
You need a spy.
More than a spy, but the details shall be discussed later.
What's my gain?
For getting us that which we seek, you will be rewarded with that which you seek. Arcane magics.
Seeing the gleam in Calron's expression, he grinned again.
Easy, isn't it? Gawain has destroyed himself, and I'm offering you what you want in exchange for service to a simpering elf king.
Perhaps too easy. What's my alternative?
His smile faded to a cold glare.
Wandering around the wilderness and dying alone like an old hermit in the rags you wear now.
He loosened the whip, its coils slithering to the ground like a trained snake.
So, what's it to be, human? Service to us?
His eyes dimmed as he lifted his chin slightly.
Or oblivion?
I was just curious.
Calron mustered his own bright smile.
I'm not a fool.
Nodding appreciably, Sakandra held out his hand.
Then come, my friend. There is much to do.
Stepping forward, he took the dark, slender fingers in his own pale hand and felt the other grasp him tightly. With an encouraging grin, Sokandra glanced up to the ball of dark yellow light hovering dutifully, doused it with a thought, then led the mage down the bank toward the water. Boarding a small boat with a demon at the oars, Drow and mage glided out into the marsh and disappeared into the rising mist. This is performed for a live audience. Thank you. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2025. Character voices for Episode 28 are performed by Kevin Norris, Jackie Illig, Richard Hammer, Darcy Aradell, and H, the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Atlas Mason, Chris Haig, Evan McDonald, Sarah Chapman, High Street Music of London, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Tiger Studios, Mix Kit of Victoria, Australia, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.